You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Hello and welcome to the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal. I'm an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. Joining me today once again to talk about country music, although a form of country music that I think none of us really care for. Maybe, we'll see. My mind might be changing about that. To talk about this, Dr. Danny Anderson, assistant professor of English at Mount Aloysius College in Crescent, Pennsylvania.
Perfect.
And that's without it written down. So finally, I got
one.
Also joining us today is a man about town, Michael Farmer, host of the Christian Humanist podcast. Before they were live podcasts, core curriculum. Gosh, what are you're on all of them now, right, Michael?
Yeah, well, I don't have another academic job, so that's the only way I can make myself feel like I'm using my PhD.
Fair enough. You said at some point you're still writing too, right?
I am, yeah. I had an article, now God knows when this will be published, but I had an article in the Imaginative Conservative a couple weeks ago. I've got another one coming out.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, I got another one coming out in, Front Porch Republic, who are always kind enough to publish my articles. So, yeah, I've been trying to stay on top of that. And then I'm working on a book about the French Catholic philosopher Gabriel Marcel, which I hope to have done by the end of the summer.
I got to say, I used to really like Front Porch Republic, and they're still good, but they've gotten a little esoteric.
I like them,
and I don't.
They're the closest thing I've ever found to something that is actually my politics. So, and since Jeff Bilbro, who is, you know, he was on Profiles, I think twice, maybe three times, and we're kind of internet friends. Since he's the editor, I like to send stuff there because he's a good editor, and I'm usually pretty sure he'll publish me.
Yeah, we can talk more Front Porch Republic later. Listeners, if you don't know that, you should check it out. It really is worth following. It's very specific in what it does, which is maybe appropriate to country music. So we're talking today about the 21st century, at least the first decade of the 21st century. And if you've listened to all of these, if we haven't ragged on modern country music every episode, we probably should have. Although again, I'm maybe modifying my thought about that a little bit, and I think that's because, maybe we'll talk more about this, but you guys can push back if you want to. When we've been talking about this older country stuff, I think just by definition we're talking about the best of the '60s and the best of the '70s,
right,
and the best of the '80s. I don't know that we would look at it the same way if we were to go back and listen to, you know, everything that was on the radio then. We might still like it and we might still say, hey, this is fine, but I don't know that we would rave about it the way that, you know, Michael talks about, you know, Merle Haggard, or Danny talks about Dwight Yoakam, or, you know, I mean, again, I don't know that we'd have that same, this is great and everything now is terrible. So I don't know that it's fair to hold now to the same standard and say, well, everything on the radio now is terrible. What we should do is pick, all right, what's the best of right now? And there's no way to know that, right? There's no way to know what are people going to be listening to 40 years down the road. Who are they going to look back and say, oh, man, this is great, and I can't believe no one paid attention to them. Who's the Buck Owens now, or who's the Merle Haggard or whoever now? Maybe it's an unfair standard. That's one possibility, and there are other possibilities too. I don't know. What do you guys think? Or
Well, I think if you gave me the best of the 20 to the 2000s, I don't hold much hope for your thesis. I think you took years off my life having to listen to this terrible
music. Till next episode, Danny.
Oh, I know it's gonna get
yeah
worse.
Yeah So yeah, well let's get to those. So obviously lots of changes happened in the early 2000s, right? The rise of the internet and the corresponding decline of the studios as gatekeepers. We see that in film, we see that in publishing, probably more in publishing than anywhere else. But we also see that in music, which means on the one hand, if you are already a star when the 2000s come around, you hold on to that much more easily than in the past because people are familiar with you, and that familiarity alone is enough to sort of keep people going. So people who in earlier times would have kind of faded and been forgotten tend to hang around. So a lot of the best-selling albums of the that first decade are by established figures. So George Strait, Reba McEntire, the Dixie Chicks, Martina McBride, Faith Hill, Tim McGraw. I mean, we could just go on through all of these people we've already talked about. Because of the fragmentation of the industry, it's easier if you're already a star to sort of hold on to that star power. With all of that said, even with all the fragmentation, the industry is still dominated by Nashville. Even with the rise of the internet, at least through the first decade, Nashville is still the moving force.
There's a reason for that too, Coyle, which is that country music, more than any other genre, is still really, really tied to terrestrial radio. So
right.
You do have a decline of the gatekeepers and a rise of the internet and all that stuff. But country music is so bound to the radio that to me, it seems like the major Nashville labels haven't declined at all. Whereas I defy you to tell me what's going on rock radio, even though I listen to way more rock music than I do country music. I have a much less sense of what's kind of big in rock music, if indeed anything is. But country music, it's easy to tell what's big. You just turn on the radio.
And you know, it's interesting. I read an article. It's been a couple of years now, but it was a survey that was done of people who were all younger than me. So it was people in like the 15 to 35 age bracket or something like that. And something like 80% of them still listen to the radio. So it you know, maybe they're not wrong to stick close to broadcast. Maybe there's something business-wise that's wise about
that. When is the last time either of you listened to terrestrial radio for anything other than sociological purposes?
I listen to the radio every time I drive in the car by myself.
Okay.
So I just turn the radio on, whatever's on, I listen to it, which that meant a lot more when I lived back east and my commute was an hour and a half. Now it's, you know, 5 minutes to Walmart or 2 minutes to work or whatever, if I'm even driving to work. If I have the kids with me, I don't, because, you know, things on the radio, we don't want them hearing yet.
Sure.
Because they're still little. But, yeah, so I do occasionally listen in on what's – and I try to listen to the country station, mostly because of this podcast, because I've been trying to do a little bit. So, yeah, I listen to it.
Not at all for me.
A couple of times a week, at least.
Yeah, I don't – unless I'm – every once in a while, if I'm traveling, like, long distances, I like to scan the dial. And sometimes you'll find like oldie stations or something in weird remote places. Not that the places are weird, but in obscure remote places. But that's like really it for me. I never listen to the radio.
Well, again, we're outside of that age bracket,
yeah, true.
Too. It's the young people who are wrong, Danny. they just don't know. We talked last time a little bit about women in the 90s, and I think we all kind of agreed that there were more women active in country music in the 90s. In retrospect, and again, prepping for this episode, I'm not sure about that anymore. So I looked through album sales from 2000 to 2010. So of the 572 weeks between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2010, through all of that time, the best-selling album in country music, that number one slot was held by women for 272 of those weeks. If we're counting groups, so I don't know, I don't know if we count something like Lady Antebellum or Sugarland as a female group or not. They're men and women, and depending on what we do with soundtracks. So the Coyote Ugly soundtrack is basically a Leanne Rimes album. But it you know had 6 weeks in 2000. I mean it was one of the reasons women stay near the top. And then in 2006, Dixie Chicks and Carrie Underwood both carry the album sales. So they're at least holding their own at the top of the charts. I didn't check the other you know, 99 spots on the charts. Maybe those are all men. So maybe maybe the grand total number is still heavily male. But at least at the very top, women are doing fine. At least look like they're doing fine through this time. Again, that's sort of my takeaway impression is it's not actually as barren for women in the 2010 in this first decade of the 20th century as I thought it would be looking through the 90s.
It's hardly egalitarian. I'm looking at the numbers you provided on the show notes, Quill, and I mean in 2000 what's the year you said 2006 when it's Dixie Chicks and Carrie Underwood, they're at the top of the charts for 20 out of 52 weeks. So, yep. So I mean that's just over a third. It's hardly chart dominance.
Well, it's almost half.
It's not almost half, and you would think that they would be you would think that they'd be about 50%, wouldn't you?
It's I mean it's 6 weeks away from being half.
Month and a half. That's yep. More than a twelfth of the year.
But then you look at 2009, and for 40 weeks out
that's
of the
true.
Year. It's all women, yeah. Right? Or you look back at 2000 and it's 42 weeks out of the year, it's all women. So it just depends on what week you're catching.
Well, there's 3 years where they crack 50%, right?
Right.
I would not call that dominance. I would, especially if you look at the pop charts, which I didn't, but I suspect if we looked at the Billboard Top 40 for that same period, it's going to be mostly women.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they dominate the country charts. I'm just saying they seem to be doing certainly better than I thought they would be doing. But almost 50%. And I didn't look at the I have no idea how many female country singers there are, so I don't know if the proportion lines up with how many women there are versus how many men. They might even be overrepresented. Certainly individuals are. I mean Taylor Swift is certainly disproportionately
sure.
represented. But I didn't look at the absolute numbers.
It is.
But still, very, very nearly 50%.
And it is. I mean, a lot of progress from the 70s, right? We
yeah.
talked before how few
sure.
female artists really are kind of staples until the 80s. And then you get quite a few. And then in the 90s, you have even more, right? And so they're more dominant, at least, those who are popular. And so, yeah, there is a... I think it's part of still of upward progression. I don't know what that looks like into the 2010s.
Yet, it does not look good. And yeah. that's why I'm pushing back, because I'm wondering if we should think of the first decade of the 21st century as a kind of holdover from the 90s, or whether we should think of it as a prefiguration of the 2010s, when women become something like 15 to 20% of songs played on country radio. But we'll get to that next time, I know.
Right, right. So again, just to maybe mildly correct that, if women are underrepresented in country music, it's not as much in this decade as it might be in the next
yes,
decade.
Yes, that's undeniable.
And some of this is because of movie soundtracks. So again, I mentioned Coyote Ugly. I have not seen that movie. Have either of you guys seen it?
No.
Okay. So no one has to turn in their man card here. I was going to shame you if you had, nor have I seen the Hannah Montana movie, which those two films bookend the early 2000s, that decade. And I assume introduce a generation of people to country music who otherwise wouldn't have known about it. I don't know that I could say anything else about either of them. I did listen to the soundtrack, and I kind of thought, yes, if I were a teenage girl, I suppose I would like this. I have nothing else to say about either of those soundtracks. You guys have anything to throw in? One soundtrack I assume that we have all heard, the soundtrack from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which we talked a little bit about in the last episode. We had a listener email mentioning that. I still think of that more as bluegrass than anything else, but it does make the album sales. Again, I'm assuming you guys have heard it. What do you think of it?
I was actually working at the PBS station in Cleveland when that came out, and there was a big concert. I think during one of the pledge drives, there was like a Oh Brother, Where Art Thou concert that was a big pledge drive that year. And so I remember it having a lot of crossover appeal, which was weird given that it was like extremely traditional country, right? I mean, it was not, it was like, it was, beyond country. It was more folk music than anything else, right? Or hillbilly music. If you go back to like the old record labels, and so old time music, yeah. And so it was to me, it was like more of a novelty, I guess, than indicative of an interest in country music. Although it is around that time that, you know, Ricky Skaggs just completely goes bluegrass. He just like completely exits country music proper and goes into this kind of niche. And so I think it is a super important album in legitimizing bluegrass, but it also kind of just, to me, draws a further division between more traditional forms of country music and what is popular country music.
Yeah. So all that to say, there is a lot going on in this decade. So what we're going to do now, if you guys don't have anything to add on technological changes, women in the industry or movie soundtracks, I want to go on and mention briefly some of the country artists who sort of come into their own during this decade. So again, looking at album sales, I went through and pulled out the names of the people who had the best-selling albums from this decade who we had not already talked about. So again, George Strait is still hitting best-selling albums. Reba McEntire, we talked about those in the 90s episode. So now we're moving on to the people who kind of first make their big appearance in the 2000s. So just a couple of minutes on each of these. Danny, do you want to lead us off?
Sure. And I want to just kind of preface a little bit before I get into my accounting of of these three. But the I think that we are dealing with the kind of the outcome of what happened in the 90s when you had this mass pop, starting with Garth Brooks, right? When you had this massive crossover appeal of country music. And we talked before about the line dancing clubs and all that sort of thing. And when there is sort of a mainstreaming of country music, I think this is sort of an outcome of that, because a lot of this stuff, particularly with someone like Keith Urban, who's one of the people you talked about, it is very slick, right? It's very slickly produced and almost unrecognizable as strictly country music, right? Anything Keith Urban sang could have been just a pop song, right? And so I do think that there is a consequence to some of that popularization between, I'm thinking of Garth Brooks and Shania Twain, and maybe Faith Hill mostly, right? But I think that's what I see as important to kind of mention as a bridge to here. But so the three you gave me, you know, I'll start with Toby Keith.
For the record, you picked them from the list.
True. It's true. The three that I've chosen to listen to. And I have to say, this was long since I had listened to, I had long stopped listening to country music by the time any of this stuff hit. I remember some of Toby Keith's early 1990s stuff, right?
Good stuff.
It was. And that's what I want to kind of begin with, is I think all three of these folks that I'm covering, I want to say good things as much as I can. And I think that they're all very talented, right? And Toby Keith, I think, just has a classic country music male voice, right? And I guess a little envious of his confidence and swagger. He has this sort of like, I don't like it, but I kind of am envious of being that self-confident, you know what I mean? And so he has like a great stage presence is what I'm saying, right? And so I think he's a terrific performer, and he's kind of developed this persona that really is kind of cool in a lot of ways, right? And so I think that said, the music starting in the 90s, and I'm going to save the patriotic one because you'll have me talk about that later on. When I survey the songs of his that were really popular back then, I guess what I get is this is sort of almost like self-aggrandizing. I mean, the song I Want to Talk About Me.
About your work, how your boss is a jerk. We talk about your church and your head when it hurts. We talk about the troubles you've been having with your brother, about your daddy and your mother and your crazy ex-lover. We talk about your friends and the places that you've been. We talk about your skin and the dimples on your chin, the polish on your toes and the run in your holes. And God knows we're gonna talk about your clothes. You know talking about you makes me smile. But every once in a while,
I want to talk about me, want to talk about I, want to talk about number one. Oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, 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 usually. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me.
Right, I mean, is like the apotheosis of what I think a Toby Keith song is, and I'm going back. What is the one song? Oh, geez, where he's trying to like make an old girlfriend jealous because.
Stadium, and I wrote your number on the 50-yard line. You were always a perfect one and a valedictorian. So under your number I wrote, call for a good time. I only wanted to get your attention, but you overlooked me somehow. Besides, you had too many boyfriends to mention, and I played my guitar too loud. How do you like me now? How do you like me now? Now that I'm on my way, you still think I'm crazy standing here today. I couldn't make you love me, but I always dreamed about living in your radio. How do you like me now?
How do you,
yeah,
like,
how
me
do you
now?
Like me now? Right?
That's a great song, Danny. I don't care what
I'm
you
not
say.
I'm not saying it's not a great song, right? But I, although if you think about the lyrics, I mean, I kind of stalked and sexually harassed you in high school, and you never never gave in.
But now, so now I'm trying, rich.
And now I'm rich. Don't yeah. you feel bad? It's a little creepy, right, in terms of its gender dynamics or whatever. But and so. I guess that's like a common thread, though, that I see in a lot of his music, right, is this kind of just self-mythologizing, right? And it's just sort of like very inward. I almost consider it like postmodern. It's like not about anything other than the status of being a country singer in the 90s or somebody who is like, and this becomes a bigger thing, I think, in the 2010s, based on what I've heard, like in gas stations and stuff, which is the only time I hear this thing. The kind of just this kind of like almost hyper real image of what it's like to be a small town person, right? Who's oppressed by big city images of small town people. And so I think you see a little bit of that with Toby Keith in that song about living in the trailer park, which I can't remember the name of that one either.
But you wonder when the last time he lived in a small town or was small enough to be oppressed by anybody.
Absolutely.
But then you could say the same thing about Springsteen. So.
Oh, absolutely. No. I totally get that. I don't know. I just feel like this is crafted more for album sales rather than to explore like a character. And that's how I sort of think about Springsteen's, like, you know, his Nebraska album or something like that. Right. It's the exploration of characters. And so there's that. And so part of this, I have to kind of fight against my kind of worst demons or whatever, not angels, but you know, my worst impulses. And you always associate certain people in your life with the things that they like. Right. And so I used to work for a short time at this place, and there was this really obnoxious woman who worked there who really loved Toby Keith. Right. And she was like this, like utter, like, bar fly. Right. And she was just, this is really, and she loved that song, I Love This Bar.
We got winners, we got losers, chain smokers and boozers, and we got yuppies, we got bikers, and we've got thirsty hitchhikers, and the girls next door dress up like movie stars. This bar.
We got cowboys, we got truckers, broken-hearted fools and suckers, and we got hustlers, we got fighters, early birds and all-nighters. And the veterans talk about their battle scars. I love this bar. I love this bar. It's my kind of place. Just walking through the front door puts a big smile on my face. It ain't too far. Come as you are.
And that was kind of like her life, is that scene that he paints with his images. And I don't want to like blame Toby Keith because of his fans, right? And so, but there is a kind of person who's attracted to Toby Keith's music that is, I don't know, just not my kind of small town person, I guess. You know what I mean? And I think that he caters to that a little bit. But that said, I mean, he sings a great song, great melodies. The song he did with Willie Nelson,
Billy, man, come on. 6 o'clock news says somebody been shot. Somebody's been abused. Somebody blew up a building. Somebody stole a car. Somebody got away. Somebody didn't get too far. Yeah, they didn't get too far.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer for the wicked that he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall old tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street for all the people to see.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I don't agree with its views on justice or anything like that, but the Beer for My Horses song.
Beer for My Horses,
yeah. But the fact that, I mean, someone like Willie Nelson respects him enough to appear not only in the album, but in what is really a terrific music video as well, right? I mean, shows you that, I mean, he's like a legitimate artist. Like, he may not be my favorite, but I give him his credit for being an excellent version of what he is. He's not the worst country music singer I've ever heard by far, right? And I think he's one of these guys that would have fit in almost any era of country music, particularly post-70s. And so, yeah, I think he's just sort of a classic country music singer that happened to be a star at a time when country music was kind of terrible.
The important question, though, Danny, is have you ever eaten at a Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill?
No, I have not. I did not know they existed, actually.
Yeah, I've never heard of
them. Oh, yeah, it's a chain. I'm not sure they're still around. The one in Minneapolis closed. But, yeah, Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill.
Yeah, this woman made her own T-shirts that say "I love this bar," and it was like, yeah, she was like a super fan, and yeah, and that song isn't terrible. The video kind of is, I guess. That song's pretty bad, actually. Now I think about it. In terms of its message, right? It's I don't know. So anyway, Gretchen Wilson was the next person you gave me, that I signed up for. Who, again, I want to say, an amazing singer, honestly. And I saw a video where she did a cover of Heart's Barracuda.
Barracuda.
with some rock band. I can't remember who it was now, backing her up. And it was like an incredible, I mean, she could have been like an all-time rock singer. I mean, she has like an amazing, just powerful voice. Right. And so, and again, like kind of where it falls flat for me is the artistic vision that they use, that they target this talent at. Right. And so, for me, all the songs that I could find of hers, I do this on YouTube, frankly, because I don't want it to screw up my Apple Music algorithm. so I keep it on YouTube, which I care less about. That's all full of conspiracy theories and Bigfoot anyway. But the songs that she sang are mostly kind of like caricatures of being a spunky small town woman who likes to ride a four wheeler in mud, kind of, you know what I mean? And it never really strives for anything much deeper than that. And I think what her kind of, angle is as an artist is that she's like every bit as country as the boys, kind of. And to that, I kind of appreciated a lot of what she does. There's a real spunk to her music and a real power too. And so, yeah. And so she's had, and you know, some laudable run-ins with the law, you know, which legitimizes her a little bit as a country singer. There was like some scuffle at an airport and stuff like that. And so I think to be a good country singer, you should have had some dark days. And I think she's definitely done that. And so, so she was like, I had not really ever listened to her, but I was very impressed with her talent, her voice. I wish the songs were more interesting. I don't know how to say it. And Keith Urban, again, like, just, I don't know. I just don't think he belongs in country music. Like, he's an amazing guitar player. Let me just give him like credit for that. Right. He could play a guitar like at a virtuoso level, and his singing voice is just beautiful. Right. But it's just not, other than this phony country Southern accent that he puts on as an Australian, who's married to Nicole Kidman. Right. There's no authenticity to it at all. Right. And so the songs that he sings, I think would be better as pop songs. Honestly, I think that they're kind of like, like 1980s level power ballads kind of. And I think that that's kind of what he does, but he sells it as country music. I remember he was on Marty Stewart's show, geez, I don't even know whenever that show was on. And he had this, he had apparently bought Waylon Jennings' guitar, like the black and white Telecaster. And he brought it on to play I've Always Been Crazy, I think, with Marty Stewart.
I've been busted for things that I didn't do. I can't say I'm proud of all the things that I've done, but I can say I've never intentionally hurt anyone. One foot over the line, winding up somewhere, one step ahead or behind. Well, it ain't been so easy, but I guess I shouldn't complain. I've always been crazy, but it kept me from going insane. Sure that you understand the chances you're taking in loving a free living man. Are you really sure you really want what you see? Be careful of something that's just what you want it to be.
Play your guitar, Keith.
When Marty Stewart was singing, it worked. Keith Urban couldn't sing those words in a believable way. I mean, the voice, the vocal performance was technically wonderful, but it just didn't match the content. And I think that's how I feel about his music in general. And that's where I signed off. And I'm really trying not to be. I just find it boring. I don't think it's bad music at all. I just don't think it's very interesting music. I don't think that there's any kind of artistic vision to what I listen to beyond what's going to sell me a lot of records at this particular moment. And I'm going to use my talent to do that, which is, you know, that's what America is about. So,
can we talk about Keith Urban's song Female?
Somebody say somebody hits like a girl. How does that hit you? Is that such a bad thing? When you hear a song that they play saying you run the world, do you believe it? Will you live to see it? Sister, shoulder, daughter, lover, healer, broken halo, mother nature, fire, suit of armor, soul survivor, holy water, secret keeper, fortune teller, virgin Mary, scarlet letter, technicolor, river wild, baby girl, woman child, female.
Sure. I
you guys
that
know
one.
This song?
No, I missed that one.
I don't
it's
know that one.
It's his response to the Me Too movement, and it is very sincere, a little bit like the Brad Paisley song Accidental Racist that we're going to talk about later, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let me just read you the – give you a dramatic reading of the lyrics of Keith Urban's
I love when Michael Farmer does this, by the way. This is my favorite thing is when Farmer brings out dramatic readings of lyrics.
When you hear somebody say somebody hits like the girl – how does that hit you? Is that such a bad thing? When you hear a song that they play saying you run the world, do you believe it? Will you live to see it? Sister, shoulder, daughter, lover, healer, broken halo, mother nature, fire, suit of armor, soul survivor, holy water, secret keeper, fortune teller, virgin Mary, scarlet letter, technicolor, river wild, baby girl, woman shine, female.
What the holy crap did I just listen
yeah,
to?
Yeah, and the actual song's not much better, I have to say. I wish he would have just let me record it as a spoken word. Maybe it could have gone to number one, and I could have made $1 billion.
If you get him playing the guitar and letting William Shatner recite that, would be gold. Yeah.
You just wonder why he didn't, I don't know, do something to let a woman sing the song instead of him. But what are you going to do?
Anything else, Danny? Otherwise, we'll let Michael hit the next chunk.
No, I'm happy to move on.
All right, so we got the three I'm talking about. We'll start with Taylor Swift, too. I just can't imagine anybody needs me to talk about Taylor Swift. She's the biggest white pop star in the world, to the extent that I think probably a lot of young people may not even realize that she began her career as this kind of country music wunderkind. She released her first album when she was 16, and I mean, she's not even from the South. She comes from Pennsylvania. Her dad is a muckety-muck at Merrill Lynch, and when she decided at 12 or 13 she wanted to become a country music singer, he moved the whole family to Nashville to get her started, and hey, it worked. So her first single is a song called Tim McGraw, which I hesitate to call her calculating because I think she is calculating, but her whole brand, especially early on, was being very, very confessional. And to some extent, I want to take her at her word that things like this are not like calculated to produce a kind of chart-topping nostalgia, but that ended up being what happened. And she put out two or three hit country albums before she more or less turned her back on country music and became, you know, a kind of synth pop arena star. Although I think there was a song on her latest album that featured the Dixie Chicks in a small role. So she's never quite lost touch with her country music beginnings. You know, she like I said, she was a country star, and to the point where I remember Gwyneth Paltrow did an impersonation of her on Saturday Night Live, where she gave her this really like hick Southern accent, which is funny because if you've ever heard Taylor Swift sing or speak, it's very clear that she is not from the South and doesn't really pretend to be from the South. She's someone who I suspect comes at country music naturally, but doesn't come at it as a kind of cultural heritage the way somebody like maybe Toby Keith does.
She's gone country like the Alan Jackson song.
Right. She's kind of the embodiment of that song. She kind of shows that country music's reach by 1990, 89, when she was born. Very famously, she was born in 1989, had reached well beyond the South and had shown an appeal to people who are the very privileged daughters of insurance executives.
Can I just take a second to plug Victoria Farmer?
I was just about to, and she's actually in the room. Victoria, do you want to say something about Taylor Swift?
I think you're correct about Tim McGraw and nostalgia, but I don't know. I have a lot to say about her transition from country to pop and why that happened, but you and I do not agree about Taylor Swift related things for the most part. So
I find her very, very calculated. I think I read an article once about how she spent a year combing the internet to see what kinds of music people wanted her to make. And that's the kind of music she makes. And I find that so like soul level offensive, even though I could admit that she writes some really good songs. She's clearly a very, very talented singer and songwriter and performer. So I don't want to disparage that. And I also want to note that she has tremendous appeal for young women and also for hyper-educated women like my wife. So obviously, I'm the one who's missing something.
Really quick things, just to like clarify stuff I heard you say.
This is gold.
Yes, the Dixie Chicks are on Lover, her most recent album. They sing backup on a song called Soon You'll Get Better.
Buttons of my coat were tangled in my hair. In doctor's office lighting, I didn't tell you I was scared. That was the first time we were there. Holy orange bottles, each night I pray to you. Desperate people find faith, so now I pray to Jesus too. And I say to you, ooh, I soon you'll get better. Ooh, soon you'll get better. Ooh, and get better soon. 'Cause you have to.
Which is about her mom's second cancer diagnosis. And the reason that they appear on that album is because she said she heard when she was a country star, the thing that record execs said to her over and over and over was, don't be like the Dixie Chicks, don't be political, don't be like the Dixie Chicks.
Which is a lesson she followed for many years.
Until she didn't, which is what a lot of Lover, the album, is about. See also the episode of Sectarian Review I was on where we talked about you need to calm down. One other thing I wanted to say about genre transition. You can cut this out. I don't care.
No. This is great.
Genre transition is on the record before Lover, on Reputation, there is one song that doesn't fit the record, New Year's Day, and it doesn't fit because it only exists on that album to be the country radio lead single,
oh, interesting,
but nowhere else. And that's all I'll say. Bye.
Thank you, Victoria.
That's episode number 128 of the Sectarian Review podcast. She and my daughter joined the show to have a really fun discussion about that song.
I believe there's also a Christian feminist podcast all about Taylor Swift, although I could be wrong about that.
There is, yeah.
And is it a Christian humanist podcast about fandoms where they talk about
that? Did we talk about
too?
Taylor Swift on the fandoms episode? That's real early.
I think I have a vague memory of that.
That's like before episode 20, I think.
I will say my first exposure to Taylor Swift was a YouTube channel that I don't even know if it exists anymore called Red State Update in like 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. And one of the hosts talked about how he had gone down to burn a bunch of Kanye West albums in protest, but they didn't want to look racist, so they burned a bunch of Taylor Swift albums.
That's
too
hysterical.
And then he went on this rant about how Hank Williams didn't drink himself to death so that Betty Cooper could read her eighth grade notebook of poetry. I mean, it was
who is
great.
Betty Cooper?
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, but what does that name mean? Is that a reference to...
isn't that the Archie comics?
Oh, I didn't know Betty's last name. That's funny. You know, I really don't want to disparage her too much, because while I am intensely annoyed by her, I don't think it's possible to deny that she is a major talent who kind of must be reckoned with.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing I feel about the artists I cover. There's something about this era that just, I think, just exuberant consumerism ruled the day. I don't know how to say it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think Taylor Swift is in some ways the definitive millennial / Zoomer pop star, and that everything she does to me seems to be about promoting brand Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
but I think that's something you can probably get more of on the Sectarian Review episode number 126. Is that right, Danny?
I believe it was 128. I've closed the window now, so I don't remember. It's always fun to have the farmers on there.
Well, folks, once again, a country music episode has gone on too long. We will pick up the conversation here in a future episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting christianhumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God.
The end of a 100 years was. The voices sound sad as they sing along. Another piece of America's lost.